are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Wednesday, everybody. This is the official immediate reaction podcast to the massive four-team deal that went down just prior to midnight Central Time on Tuesday night, recording this early on Wednesday. Full disclosure on the process for me recording this podcast, I went to bed a little earlier than normal last night. It broke just before midnight, the trade did. I woke up to the news, and now I've spent the past hour plus, I guess, digesting the results of the trade to try and formulate some coherent thoughts on it and come up with an opinion on whether or not I like this trade. So we're going to talk all things trade today. The Wolves do play the Atlanta Hawks tonight on Wednesday night at Target Center. Of course, Atlanta was involved in the four-team trade, and what was the second trade involving the Hawks and the Timberwolves organizations in the past few weeks. But I'm quite confident that reacting to this trade is going to trump the 13-win Hawks taking on the 15-win Wolves, with both teams likely to be quite shorthanded tonight as well. So we're not going to really spend any time on that game. We're going to instead focus on the trade. And this podcast will probably end up being a little bit longer than our typical daily podcast. Also working on setting up hopefully some crossover podcasts with the Locked On Network pods that are also whose teams are also a part of this trade, whether it be roundtables or just some crossover podcasts. So keep an eye and an ear out for that. Also, a quick reminder before we really get into things to subscribe to this podcast, Locked On Wolves, on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, where everywhere that you get your podcasts. And follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. For some reason, we have a T in there. But don't forget to follow us on there. Okay, let's go ahead and break down the trade in its entirety, and then we'll focus on what the Wolves sent out compared to what they brought in. I'm going to focus probably 80%, 90% of our attention on the Wolves. Obviously, this is a Wolves podcast. We will touch a little bit on what I think of the trade for the other teams as well. But basically, the Wolves are what they're sending out in this trade. They're trading Robert Covington to Houston. They're trading Shabazz Napier and Kata Bates-Diop and Noah Vonleh to Denver. Jordan Bell's also going to Houston. And then the Wolves will acquire, they will acquire Evan Turner and his expiring deal from the Atlanta Hawks, Malik Beasley and Juan Hernan Gomez from the Nuggets, and also Jared Vanderbilt from the Nuggets. Plus, they'll get a first-round pick that's actually the Nets pick through the Hawks. And right now, that's projected to be like the 15th or 16th pick in the draft. So this was framed by Adrian Wojnarowski on ESPN as the best available first-round pick that was out on the market. The Timberwolves will land that in this deal as well. And it doesn't look like they're sending any picks out, although there is a pick. Somebody gets a second-round pick somewhere. I don't think anything's going away from the Wolves in terms of picks, but everything obviously is still being hashed out just a few hours after it was first reported. So that's what the trade is from the Wolves' perspective. I guess the other pieces we should mention, Atlanta gets Clint Capela from Houston. Clint Capela is the biggest individual name in this trade. They also get Nene for contract reasons. The Rockets are sending Gerald Green to Denver. He's also injured, so that's, again, matching salaries, essentially. All things told, this is a 12-player deal, a four-team 12-player deal. This is apparently the biggest trade in terms of teams and the number of players since a trade in 2000. I think I saw that was a Patrick Ewing trade. And basically, this trade happens because Houston didn't want to extend Clint Capela. They didn't want to pay him. They're trying to play a small ball a lineup consistently now, and as good as Clint Capela is, he's one of the better centers in the league. They identified, Houston did, that they didn't want to extend him at what he was going to cost. For Atlanta, they get Clint Capela for basically a mid-first round pick and an expiring contract, which is a coup for them. They're trying to match up. They've already got Trae Young. They've got some other promising wing players as well, and they're now trying to match up a borderline all-star big man with some, I mean, Trae Young's literally an all-star. Whether or not he should have been is another discussion, but he's still a promising young scorer. And some other young wing players as well. Kevin Huerter comes to mind. And now Atlanta has a star big man, assuming that they do extend him to go along with their strong backcourt. So it makes sense for them. That's really a steal. And for Houston, they didn't want to extend Capela anyways. They actually became the first team since 1963. This is as part of the ESPN report citing Elias Sports Bureau. The other night, Houston was the first team since 1963 to go an entire game without using a player taller than 6'6". and they're transitioning to a 100% all-time small ball team. They get Robert Covington, who can guard positions 1 through 4, and Houston also gets, I mean, Jordan Bell's a, I mean, he's probably not going to play much, but he might be the, he's not a bad big man to have in a small ball lineup in terms of switchability, his passing ability as well. And then Houston's going to pick up a second round pick as well in this trade. So I think winners all the way around, except for really Denver. They improve their depth at the point guard spot. Shabazz Napier, I mean, arguably the Nuggets' biggest weakness was backup point guard, and now they have Napier, who's a good backup point guard. Sending out a couple of young players, and we'll get into the players specifically here that the Wolves got, and Malik Beasley and Juan Hernan Gomez, is it saps their depth elsewhere a little bit. Noah Vonleh is a good player, but I mean, he wasn't cracking the rotation with the Wolves. Kata Bates-Diop still has a little bit of upside, and I'll essentially, this is a challenge trade in some ways. I mean, not in a traditional sense, because they're far from star players, but the Kata Bates-Diop for Jared Vanderbilt is almost a 1-for-1 as like a side part of this deal that didn't need to happen. So I want to dive into that a little bit and what the Wolves might see in Vanderbilt compared to Bates-Diop. So it's a little bit curious from the Nuggets perspective, but everybody else it pretty much makes sense for. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the Wolves side of things, why this trade makes sense for the Wolves, and then each player individually. If I had to give just a quick recap of what I think of the trade before we really dive in, I think that this was more than a shuffling deck chairs move for the Timberwolves. It's also the sort of thing that I wasn't expecting. If you've listened to this podcast over the last few weeks, I did not think they were actually going to pull the trigger on a Robert Covington trade, because I thought that Covington was exactly the sort of player the Wolves needed and that Gerson Rosas wants to surround Karl-Anthony Towns with. We did hear a lot from Rosas over the summer about timelines, about finding, you know, matching Karl-Anthony Towns' timeline and his championship window potentially. And clearly the Wolves decided that Covington at, I think he's 31 now, even though he's got 2 years left on his deal, the end of his prime does not line up with Towns' prime, obviously. And also there's a little bit of injury risk there. And this was clearly a strike while the iron is hot type move to get some young assets who maybe fit the Wolves equally as good as Covington moving forward, are cheaper in the moment and could be extended at affordable contracts. And obviously there's still some upside for especially Beasley, but also for Hernan Gomez. And ultimately they decided the timelines weren't concurrent. Rosas in the front office struck while they could get a couple of promising young players and draft assets. Clearly Beasley is the most intriguing piece. And again, we'll get into that. Don't overlook Hernan Gomez in this trade. Evan Turner's largely a means to an end in terms of an expiring deal. He's got $18.6 million expiring this summer. He could possibly even be flipped before the deadline on Thursday, which is, what, less than 36 hours away. Or he'll be one of several wings who handles the ball for the rest of the year for the Wolves, as there are now 0 point guards on NBA, you know, on guaranteed contracts. I mean, Jordan McLaughlin's on a 2-way deal, and that's it. So we'll talk a lot more about that here in a moment. So next segment here, I do want to focus on each player individually and what I see in Hernan Gomez, in Beasley, in Vanderbilt, and what this means for the Wolves' rotation for the rest of the year. We're not going to talk about the rest of the teams in this deal moving forward on this pod. But first, I did want to mention a contest we're doing across the Locked On Network that's only valid now today and tomorrow. And actually, you could have gotten in on it today. I'll mention that here on Wednesday, or on Tuesday. Today's Wednesday. Get into that here in a second. But basically, here's a contest. Win 2 tickets to see your favorite team in their home arena by guessing an NBA trade perfectly before it happens. We're calling it Pre-Bomb the Woj Bomb. Go to any of the Locked On NBA Network accounts on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Post the trade you think will happen. Tag 5 people with your trade in your post. If you're correct, you'll have a chance to win 2 tickets to see your favorite team play in their home arena. Trades will be evaluated based on players and picks, not cash. If multiple people win, the first person with the correct trade is the winner. One winner will be chosen across all Locked On Network social accounts. If no one guesses the exact trade, the winner will be the one closest to the pin, if you will. Go now and pre-bomb the Woj Bomb with your trade deadline trade at Locked On NBA on any of our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram accounts across the Locked On Network. Over at Dunking with Wolves, where I'm one of the co-experts, co-editors on that website, we had a writer who almost predicted this trade. Didn't have the Nuggets included, I don't think, but had the Hawks and Rockets correct, basically had the pieces correct, and he wrote it. And just prior to the Woj rumor, midday on Tuesday, we didn't publish it until right about the same time, but he got real close to predicting it. Of course, He didn't post it on a Locked On account and tag anybody in it. So he wasn't officially in the contest. But it just goes to show, put some pieces together and you've got a real shot at winning one of these. And there's quite a bit of rumors still out there. So definitely get on social media, participate in Pre-Bomb the Woj Bomb, and win some tickets. All right, next up, we're going to get into each player individually and really dig in on what their fit is with the Wolves and what Minnesota is going to be hoping to get out of each of those players moving forward. All right, let's get a little bit in the weeds and talk about some individual players. Clearly, this trade was all about getting some value for a player who had a lot of value in the marketplace in Robert Covington and trying to get back some players with some significant upside. And I do think that they did that. The key to this trade is, I think it's Malik Beasley is the key, but I said this earlier, I don't want to overlook Juan Hernan Gomez. Let's start with Beasley. So Beasley was a rotation player. I mean, he still is a rotation player for the Nuggets, but he was a key rotation player for this Nuggets team just last season. Remember, this is a team, 54-win team, number two seed in the West, and won a playoff series. And he was a key part of it. He played in 81 games for last year's Nuggets team. He started 18. He played 23.2 minutes a game. He was fifth on the team in total minutes played. So a really important key cog to this team as a 22-year-old last season. Shot 40% from the field, 40.2% from the field on five threes a game. And overall from the floor, shot 47%, 85% free throw shooter. In terms of his counting stats, roughly 11 points, 2.5 rebounds a game. And was just a solid all-around player, again, as a 22-year-old. And pretty much across the board, all the statistics suggest that really the only holes in his offensive game were paint scoring and then getting to the free throw line, which obviously go hand in hand. He did not shoot hardly any shots at the rim. He's primarily a jump shooter and isn't a great rebounder for his position, but he's okay. He's also not a great defender. He was okay last year, but this year especially, and prior to last year, this is now his fourth season, he's just kind of a so-so at best defender, which it could be a challenge for the Wolves. Obviously, the defense has been an issue, and wing defense in particular, even though they've got a couple guys in Josh Okogie and Jarrett Culver who theoretically are good defenders, Beasley is not that caliber of defender, not at all. For his career, though, and again, this is year four for him, so he's played in over 200 NBA games, he's a 38.3% career three-point shooter, which immediately makes him, outside of Karl Anthony Towns, the best shooter on this team, certainly the best wing shooter on this team. He's a far better shooter. He's a legit three-point shooter. If you look at the past couple of seasons in Denver, more than half of his shots have come from beyond the arc. For his career, 52% of his shot attempts are from three-point range over the past season and a half, so this season and last season, just under 55% of his shot attempts come from beyond the arc. And over the last 2 years, last year and this year, 55% of his shots are coming from beyond the arc. He's shooting 39% between last year and this year. So immediately the Wolves add a facet to their wing group that they haven't had, which is a dynamic shooter. He's a better shooter than Robert Covington. Maybe his range isn't, I don't know enough about his range. You know, it's probably not quite he's not the size of Robert Covington. Covington's got at least 3 inches on Beasley. He doesn't have the range of Covington. And obviously he's not the defender that Covington was, not even close, but he's a better shooter. And the Wolves need that dynamic in this offense with the number of threes. They're top three still in 3-point attempts per game in the league. And Beasley immediately becomes this team's second best 3-point shooter and best shooter not named Karl Anthony Towns. So that matters. Contract-wise, he's a restricted free agent, and the Wolves will likely need to pay up to keep him. He's the type of guy who, if you look at his numbers as a part-time starter and full-time member of the rotation for this Nuggets team, effectively a sixth man for most of the year, for a 54-win team last year, he's the type of guy where a team is going to see that upside and extrapolate out that production over more minutes per game. I mean, he's playing 5 minutes less per game this year because the Nuggets have such a deep roster. He's going to get opportunity in Minnesota. Depending on how he performs the rest of the year, the Wolves are probably going to have to pay up to keep him next year. But perhaps, especially depending on how this pursuit of D'Angelo Russell and maybe Bradley Beal or some other players plays out, maybe that's worth it. Maybe the Wolves really believe in the upside. I mean, he's only 23. And, you know, Beasley, he just turned 23. He doesn't turn 24 until November, end of November, basically Thanksgiving next year. So the Wolves may look at this and say, this is the guy we wanted all along. We think he's been underutilized, you know, obviously on a good team in Denver, and look at what this upside could be if they do choose to pay up. Now, on the other side of things, Juan Hernan Gomez, I think also is a very good player. I think he's also underrated. It was underutilized for a deep Denver team. He's not the sort of player that the Wolves are going to pay up majorly to extend. There are some similarities to Dario Saric, and this front office obviously thought he was better used as an upgrade to move up a few picks in the first round than as somebody that the Wolves would need to extend in restricted free agency. I don't think the Wolves will readily give a ton of money to Hernan Gomez. I do think, however, and we'll come back to this after we talk about him as a player, that the Wolves could try and sign him to something like a Jake Lehman type, almost a sweetheart, restricted free agent type deal where Hernan Gomez gets his guaranteed money, but the Wolves get to kind of spread it out and they aren't paying top dollar for it. In terms of Hernan Gomez as a player, he is, it's tempting to just compare him to every other basically European stretch four, but there's a lot of similarities, quite frankly. He's a good three-point shooter. He's only shooting 25% from deep this year, but he also isn't playing very much. He's only playing 12 minutes a game, 34 games he's appeared in. He's kind of a fringy rotation player. And he, again, shooting just 25% from three this year. However, for his career, he's just a hair under 35%. He was a rotation player last year, just like Beasley was, for, again, a 54-win, second-seeded team in the West. He started 25 games for this team, played 19 minutes a game, shot 36.5% from three last year. So that immediately makes him the third-best three-point shooter on the Wolves after Towns and Beasley. If you look at last year's number, and even his career mark of 35%, really slots him in as this team's third-best three-point shooter. Remember, Shabazz Napier was also a decent shooter, especially compared to the rest of the roster, and he's gone too. So immediately the Wolves add this element to shooting they didn't have. In some ways, he's a better fit next to Towns. He's a better fit than Dario Saric. He's overall a better defender than Dario. He's just an okay rebounder, but he's a pretty good defender. He can play in a switching concept. He can guard threes and fours. Size-wise, he's 6'9", and is still only 24 years old. So there's still some upside here for Hernan Gomez. I think the biggest thing is just seeing what this fit looks like, and he may start day one at power forward for the Wolves, probably not tonight in Atlanta, but by the time the Wolves take the court this weekend, Hernan Gomez might be the starting power forward to see how he fits next to Towns and see if the Wolves can get him some open three-point shots and see what that shot actually looks like in the flow of this offense. Remember, the Nuggets don't actually shoot that many threes. Their offense is, it's obviously a good offense, but in terms of league-wide, they don't shoot all that many threes. So both Hernan Gomez and Beasley are going to get every opportunity to just launch from beyond the arc with this Wolves team, and there's going to be space for them to operate with Towns as well. It remains to see. I haven't seen enough of Hernan Gomez to know how good of a passer he is, but in terms of his, he's a good shooter, an okay rebounder, and an okay defender, and his size and shooting ability makes him a good fit next to Towns. Defense is overall still an issue for this team, especially with Hernan Gomez being an okay defender and Beasley not being a good defender. But if David Vanterpool can continue to work on this team's defense as the defensive coordinator and improve the team on that side of the floor, then these two players make the offense that much more dynamic. And it's an offense that has really struggled recently as well. And they're also not players who are necessarily going to need the ball in their hands to operate offense. Beasley's more of a catch and shoot guy and an efficient player than he is somebody who's going to create a ton off the dribble. Same thing with Hernan Gomez. Those are both players. If the Wolves end up keeping Andrew Wiggins, or if they end up moving him in a trade for D'Angelo Russell in the next 30 hours, or if it's over the summer, neither of those guys are high usage players who need the ball in their hands to be successful. And that's clearly something the Wolves are taking into account. Lastly, I want to talk about Jared Vanderbilt. And I think this is an intriguing part of this trade that may end up being nothing, but I think it's something that can easily be overlooked because of all the other names involved, like literally all the other names that are in this trade. So I want to spend our last segment talking about the Bates-Diop for Vanderbilt swap, and then also what the Wolves roster looks like with possibly one more. I mean, there's still a day until the deadline, so something else could still happen. So we'll get into that coming up next. Okay, moving into the Kata Bates-Diop Jared Vanderbilt part of this trade, I do think that it's easy to overlook it. I want to start by saying that Kata Bates-Diop, I still think, is a solid NBA prospect. And just kind of perusing the NBA, or I guess the Timberwolves Twitter sphere, the blogosphere, the various blogs and Twitter feeds that everybody talks about or everybody follows. And unfortunately, some of the comment sections as well. There seems to be a little bit too much wringing of the hands over losing Kata Bates-Diop. And I want to acknowledge that he was a solid second round pick. He was a guy who slid too far in the draft, Big Ten Player of the Year. There's a lot of qualities there with Bates-Diop that make him a solid NBA prospect. And I recognize that, and I myself thought it was a great draft pick. I think he's shown some flashes. Earlier this year, there was a 2-3 game stretch where he was knocking down corner threes at an extremely high rate, playing solid defense. And it really seemed like he could be a legit NBA rotation player. And I still think he can be. But I also want to acknowledge that he's 24 years old already. He's just in his second year in the league. And year after next, he's also going to be due for a little bit of he's going to get a raise, right? And he's only a 30% three-point shooter. Those are the facts. A guy like Bates-Diop, who isn't ultra-athletic, he relies on his length defensively. He's an okay rebounder for his size. He needs to shoot better than 30% from three, and maybe he will in the future. I just think that he perhaps has been a little bit overrated because of the idea of what he could be and should be, and also the value they got him for in the draft. And so I want to start by saying that. Obviously, he's a better NBA player at this moment today than Jared Vanderbilt, who they basically just got in return in what's virtually a one-for-one swap. But Vanderbilt's upside and fit in the modern NBA, I think, is a little bit better than Bates-Diop, and I'll tell you why. So Vanderbilt only played 14 games at Kentucky as a freshman. He had some injury problems. But in the NBA now, he was a second-round pick a couple of years ago. The Nuggets, actually, it was a two-for-one deal. They actually gave up a second asset to, I think it was Orlando, to acquire the rights to Vanderbilt. So they thought highly enough, the Nuggets did, of him to give something up to get him in the second round. He's long, he's athletic, he's a strong defender and rebounder already. Those are all things that we know about Vanderbilt. Those were all things that he was known for coming into the draft. And that was, he's 6'9". He's got a 7'1" wingspan. His standing reach is 8'10". And he's got a big upper body. I mean, he's somebody who can rebound the ball. He's also a good ball handler and passer. He can handle the ball on the open floor. He can pass to people who are, he can pass in the open floor. He can get to the basket. He's also a strong defender. He can attack closeouts. He can guard multiple positions as well. And all of those things matter. He's going to be a good transition player. He's going to be, likely his ceiling is as a key, like a backup four, somebody who can come in and guard, who can guard opposing fours and some fives, depending on the team, and also switch onto some threes. The upside is probably that. It's probably a rotational big who's a strong defender. But there's a chance that it's a little bit more than that. I actually think, in reading through his scouting reports, he sounds a lot to me, and I haven't seen this anywhere, but everything about him and his scouting reports reminds me a lot of what Jordan Bell is and is supposed to be. And it makes a lot of sense that the Wolves thought that Bell could be a good fit next to Towns. And I'm not really sure why he didn't get more run with Towns. I haven't looked up the number of minutes they were on the floor together this year when Bell was on the Wolves, but it wasn't often. And I remember when Bell signed, he was excited about the opportunity to handle the ball more in the offense and play next to Towns, and thought that that was a selling point when they signed Jordan Bell in the offseason. Clearly that didn't come to fruition. I don't know if that was a Ryan Saunders call or if it was whatever else happened. But at some point, I'd like to see Vanderbilt play with Karl-Anthony Towns and see what an athletic, defensive-minded, strong rebounder can do. He's certainly more mobile than Gorgui Dieng. He's not a shooter. He can't shoot from deep. He doesn't have much touch, similar to Jordan Bell. But he can pass in the open floor. He can rebound. He can put the ball on the deck. All of those things that made Jordan Bell an attractive fit next to Towns makes Vanderbilt an interesting project. Now, he's not going to come in and play a ton of minutes right away. He just isn't. But he has some upside, and perhaps that's as a backup four next year, and he plays stretches with Towns depending on matchups. Maybe he gets some minutes at the backup five when they're playing a team like Houston that's going all small, and he has the ability to switch onto bigger and smaller players. I think that there's a lot of possibility there. He hasn't yet turned 21, and just like Bates-Diop, he's got another year on his deal before the Wolves need to talk about an extension. So he's in a similar contract situation. He was a second-round pick in the same draft as Bates-Diop. So in some ways, I mentioned this is basically a challenge trade. The Nuggets want to add a guy who can step in and play some fringe rotation minutes now in Bates-Diop. He's 4 years older than Vanderbilt, even though they came out the same year. And Bates-Diop can can play more of how the Nuggets want to play. He's not a three-point shooter. He's still a switchable guy. He's an okay rebounder. He's a good passer. He can put the ball on the floor, and he's ready now. Vanderbilt is more of an upside play, a defensive play, somebody who's going to run the floor a little bit better than Bates Diop, and that fits what the Wolves want to do. So it's just really intriguing that these front offices looked at this and said that this is essentially a one-for-one as a side, you know, that didn't need to happen as part of this trade. But I wonder if this was something that – I wonder – which team actually initiated this and was more interested in making this happen. But for me, this is an interesting upside play for the Wolves. And I look forward to seeing if and when Vanderbilt gets an opportunity this year or next year in the Wolves rotation. So to put a bow on this here at the tail end of the podcast, the Wolves sent out Robert Covington, who had 2 years left on his deal after this one. They sent out Kata Bates-Diop, who had a year after this one. And then three guys who were all in minimal contracts that expired this summer in Shabazz Napier, Jordan Bell, Noah Vonleh. Freed up 5 roster spots. The Wolves are taking back Malik Beasley, Juan Hernan Gomez, Jared Vanderbilt, and Evan Turner. So they're sending out five guys, bringing in 4. They're not taking on any guaranteed money after this year, except for Vanderbilt, which is essentially a wash with Kata Bates-Diop. Malik Beasley and Juan Hernan Gomez will both be restricted free agents this summer. I think the Wolves will pay up for Beasley if they like what they see over the last few months here of the season. And I think they'll try and get Hernan Gomez back on a reasonable deal because, again, I think he's a good fit next to Towns at the right price. But they'll get an opportunity to see that up close and give him plenty of minutes. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see what that pairing looks like. Evan Turner, I mentioned this earlier in passing. I'm curious to see. I think there's still a chance he gets flipped as an expiring deal. If not, they basically, the Wolves essentially sent out Jeff Teague's expiring deal and the next couple of years of Covington to get back Alan Crabb's expiring deal, which is $18.5 million, and Turner's, which is also $18.6 million. So that's over $37 million in expiring contracts between Turner and Crabb, who both were on the Hawks to start the year, that are coming off the books at the end of the season. Crabb's obviously hurt, but the Wolves wanted his shooting on the roster, so we'll see when he comes back what he can do. And then Turner may stay on the roster as the de facto point guard. He's just an okay rotational player, is vastly overpaid, and is much better cast as a fringe rotation player on a playoff team. But the Wolves may just see what this offense looks like without a point guard and rotate the ball handling minutes between Andrew Wiggins, Jarrett Culver, Evan Turner. It's going to be ugly at times, certainly, if that's what they choose to do. But it'll be an interesting experiment, and it'll give them a good sense for what this offense could look like when it's fully formed here, hopefully by next year. If he's flipped, which is always a possibility, they have his expiring now that they could potentially use in a deal if they're able to convince the Warriors to take, you know, less than what they're asking for currently for D'Angelo Russell and send Turner's contract as well. But I think at this point, it seems more likely he's still on the team come the trade deadline Thursday afternoon. Overall, I think that obviously the verdict is going to be out for a little while on this trade. It all depends on what they do primarily with Beasley and Hernan Gomez. It caught me a little bit off guard, but it makes sense to me. It's classic Rosas in that, which sounds funny because he's still in his first year running a team. But if you look at what the Rockets have done over the years, this is pretty similar. Basically, and I said this coming into the season, guys like Jordan Bell, Noah Vonleh, I didn't think those guys would stay on the team. It didn't make sense to sign veteran big men to play behind your best player, Karl Anthony Towns, on just $2 million deals. The Wolves clearly knew that those were guys that could be used to facilitate a trade later, maybe be sent independently for second-round picks, depending on how desperate teams were. And then also a guy like Shabazz Napier. I mean, he was always just going to be a backup point guard, but he's more used to a playoff team. And he's somebody who helped the Wolves essentially win the trade, the portion of the trade with the Nuggets, and take back guys with upside in Beasley and Hernan Gomez. So basically taking all these guys on cheap one-year deals, expiring deals, send them out for a couple players with upside that they have the opportunity to extend at a controlled cost in Beasley and Hernan Gomez, another guy with upside and athleticism and defensive capabilities in Vanderbilt, and then also expand their portfolio of expiring contracts. I mean, the Wolves really only had Teague expiring this offseason, and now they've turned that into Crabb and Teague, $37 million, and plus all these, you know, there's still some smaller deals that will expire too. And it gives the Wolves more flexibility for trades. They also have 2 roster spots, which is another reason why I don't think they're done making moves. It wouldn't shock me if something else happened in the next 28, 29 hours before the deadline, where the Wolves took on some more salary because they have a couple of roster spots to do that. And I think this is just one of many moves, and it's more than a shuffling deck chairs move in my estimation. It's not like the Wolves have the worst record in the league since Thanksgiving. So clearly there's nothing wrong with rocking the boat a little bit. And I think that what they did includes a lot of upside moving forward. All right, that's all we have for you today. I know this podcast is a little longer than normal. We didn't even cover tonight's game against the Hawks. We will be back on Thursday recapping the game against the Hawks. Depending on what the Wolves would do between now and Thursday morning, perhaps we'll be talking a lot more about the trade market and other rumors that could be out there, although the Wolves have now moved their biggest piece in Robert Covington. And then Friday's show, perhaps things will work out nicely. We can talk about the Hawks game Thursday, and then maybe there will be a deadline deal on Thursday afternoon that we can talk about on Friday. But obviously, there's a lot to talk about this week. And again, keep an eye out for any crossover podcasts or roundtables that we do with the blogs from, or excuse me, with the podcasts here at the Locked On Network with the Nuggets, Hawks, and Rockets. So pay attention for that. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.